Well, hello, folks, and welcome to another edition of My Car Guru. I feel like I've been applying for a new car dealership, another franchise, like maybe Hyundai or Kia or Honda. There's typically a tremendous amount of paperwork that is required. As you can imagine, they want to make sure you're, you know, not an alien of some kind. They want to verify that you have the funds to do what you need to do. They want to know what about your business experience and all that stuff. It's pretty extensive. Well, right now I'm applying for another business. I'm going to be in the, what would you call it? What would you call it without calling it what it is? I'm going to sell equipment. How's that? So in order to be able to do that in the state of Tennessee, one of the things you have to do is apply for a sales tax exemption form. It's a resale certificate, basically, so that you can sell stuff or you can buy stuff and not pay sales tax on it and then sell it, but then you have to pay sales tax, or whoever's buying it from you have to. So anyway, I've been navigating the Tennessee Department of Revenue website, and quite frankly, not navigating it very well. It's kind of frustrating. You know, at my advanced age, I have a whole lot less patience for minutiae, you know, the details. And it's been a while. Let's see. The last time I applied for a franchise was 2018 when I became a Nissan dealer. And I still had, well, I had must have had more brain cells back then than I have now, because right now this is whipping my hiney. So hopefully I can get through this. What I need is my office manager. She has a lot of experience with this stuff, but she's out. She's on a cruise. And then my daughter, Abby, is too busy right now. She said, "Dad, I got too much on my plate right now." So she's expecting me to do it. But sometimes, you know, we just need a little assistance and a little patience. So I think I'm going to take a break from it and do a radio program. I had an interesting phone call. It was on my voicemail. You know, since I leave out my personal cell phone number, 423-552-2020, a lot of people use it. That's the intention. You know, really, though, I thought it would be, people thought I was crazy putting my cell phone number out there. But people are just wonderful. They're very respectful. They'll send a text or they'll leave a message, and they're patient with me to call them back. Sometimes it might take 24 hours. Rare circumstances like this one took a little bit longer than that. But once I got to it, you know, I was able to make a difference. So I called the guy. Matter of fact, called him late on Sunday evening. And he was very surprised that Lenny Lawson would be giving him a call that late. You know, people that have been listening to me for a lot of years, they kind of get used to this voice. And then when I see him, and it's like that lady that said, "You know, you look older in person than you sound." I said, "Well, thank you very much." But a lot of times people just want to say, "Could you say a few words for me so I know it's you?" So that's what I do. But anyway, this gentleman knew my voice right at the get-go. And so he's got a situation, bought a used car from me about, well, a little over a year ago. And his son has put a bunch of miles on it in that period of time, about, I think, 25,000, if I'm doing my math correctly. And the transmission has gone out. So what's a person to do? You know, it was a 90,000 mile vehicle when I sold it to him, and it was performing well. I mean, how do you know? It'd be nice if there was some kind of a crystal ball that came with every car that would tell you whether all the components are going to continue to operate as they're designed. But that doesn't always happen. So this particular vehicle has a CVT transmission. A continuously variable transmission. And companies like Subaru, Honda, I don't know if Toyota uses them or not, Nissan, which that was the case with this vehicle, use CVTs. And, you know, 90% of CVTs are just fine, and they'll last a long time, but about 10% of them go wonky. And that's what happened with this vehicle. No way to predict it. He got 25,000 miles on it. Now he's got to take it and get it fixed. And so what's the first thing he does? Well, he goes to a repair shop, an independent repair shop, and says, "I need to fix my transmission." Well, they had to do a little research and stuff. Now, most of the guys that work at independent, or gals, that work at independent repair shops used to work at a car dealership. A lot of them don't. And I would say the vast majority do not have the level of training that you would find in a new car dealership. Some may disagree. But that's just been my experience. Now, the guys that own the shop, they're the ones that have the most experience, but they got tired of turning wrenches. So now they've hired a bunch of people to come in, and they're probably, there's an A tech is the best tech there is. Then there's a B, he's second best, and then a C and a D. And most of them are either, you know, very low B techs or C techs. C techs are really good at doing brake jobs and, you know, servicing your vehicle. They can replace an alternator. You know, they're component replacers. They're not really, you know, transmission people. Transmission people are A techs. I mean, they are the brainiacs in the world because transmissions are very complicated devices. So he goes to an independent shop. They give him a price, $5,000. So he goes to another independent shop. Same story, $5,000. Just, you know, give or take a few bucks. And then, let's see, where else did he go? Oh, he went to a transmission specialty shop. And they echoed about the same price. So then he calls the guru. Of course, I am the culprit here, I guess. I did sell it to him. But, you know, you got to ask yourself, if a transmission lasts that long, he didn't buy a warranty. It's 90,000 miles when he bought it. Now it's got 115,000. Was that Lenny Lawson's fault? Should he have sold a car that the transmission was going to go out on? You know, there's a lot of people out there probably saying, no, you shouldn't. But, you know, you just don't know. I mean, when you buy something used, you do not know. Now, if he had done the research, he would probably have found out about that, you know, some of these transmissions. It's a greater failure rate than just like a car that doesn't have a CVT that maybe I'm trying to think of a brand. Maybe a Toyota Corolla, which is a comparable car. Maybe it has just a regular probably a six-speed automatic transmission. Of course, a lot of them fail, too. So you just don't know. So he called me. He said, well, what can we do? Well, when I came into the dealership today, I did this. I went straight to my service advisor for Nissan, and I say, I need a price on a CVT transmission for a 2013 Nissan Versa. And he said, okay, what's wrong with it? I said, well, it's out. It'll go in reverse, but it won't go forward. It's just really acting badly. So he said, okay, well, let me check with the parts and stuff. So he got back with me. Now, my technicians are certified Nissan technicians. They can rebuild transmissions. They could probably fashion one out of a piece of rock. Well, probably not. But, you know, you're looking at some highly trained, skilled people. And so our price to him was $4,200. Still a lot of money, but it's $800 less than what it would have been had he gone somewhere else. Now, that's before Lenny starts whacking on it. So I'm gonna give him a break and cut that even lower because I want to preserve the relationship. He's not mad. You know, this is one of those examples of somebody calling and being extremely nice. And you know what? I like to help people that are nice. If somebody comes into the dealership, and I've talked about this before, and they're just raising Cain and yelling out there in the service drive and pounding their fist on the service advisor's desk. First, you got to calm them down. You know, the worst way to get somebody to calm down is to say, you need to calm down, because that just does not work. I learned that the hard way. No, you don't do that. You invite them to another location and you calmly say, listen, you know, we want to help you. We want to figure out what's going on. We're going to come up with a solution, and we hope that you'll be satisfied. Well, you better, you know, and then they eventually, though, the temperature comes down, and then you can talk to them. You know, people get irate. It's hard to talk to them. But my point is, just don't get there. Just don't go there. It's a bad way to start. And I understand your car is very important to you, and it's a big part of your life. You know, your car life is a segment of your life, and if it's not operating well, things aren't going good, you got a problem, like a transmission that doesn't shift, then, you know, it's disruptive. I get it. But it's not always our fault. It's not always the service advisor's fault. It's just things happen. So be nice. All right, I'll take my first break. I'll be back here in just a second. Okay, let's talk about preventative measures. So you're getting ready to buy a new used vehicle. New to you, but it's used. It's got miles on it. It's got 90,000 miles on it. What do you really need to know about that car? You know, if it's on a car dealer's lot, then you really don't know where it came from. You don't know what it was traded in on. You don't know the driving habits of the people who owned the car before they traded it. You really don't know what their motives were. Maybe their motives were that this has been a problem car. Or maybe it's been a great car, but it's just getting a lot of miles on it, and they just wanted to trade. Maybe they're just sick of it, you know, tired of looking at it. They just want something new. Maybe it doesn't fit their needs anymore. Could be a lot of reasons. Wouldn't it be nice to know what those reasons are before you spend money on the car? I mean, especially if it was a problem car. So how do you find that out? Well, I don't care where you go. If you go to a new car dealer or a used car dealer, or you, well, if you're buying it from an individual, you know who owned it because you're talking to them. But still, you don't know how it was used, and you don't know how long they've owned it. And if they bought it from somebody else, why did they trade it in? So, you know, you want to get that history. But if you go to let's say you came to Gateway Ford and you want to buy, a Honda CR-V that we have on the lot that's got 75,000 miles on it. Is it okay for you to ask about the history of the car? Absolutely. Now, you can go to Carfax.com or I guess you can go to Experian. We use Experian. We use something called AutoCheck. And we just find that it's more accurate. But you can go to Carfax and pull a Carfax, but I wouldn't. I just ask the dealer to show you the Carfax or show you the auto check and review it with them and see where it came from. But even more than that, if I'm buying a car, if I'm buying that CRV, I'd like to talk to the owner. Now, a lot of dealerships won't give you that information. They say, well, that's confidential, but I would. I mean, I would just call, what I would do is call the previous owner first. And I'd say, listen, I got somebody interested in buying your car. Would you mind telling them a little bit about your car? Now, there's some risk involved there, you know, for the dealership. Because what if the salesperson didn't ask and has no clue what's going on? And they say, that was a horrible car. Well, that would be a problem for them, but it's not a problem for you. So ask about the history on a used car before you buy it. You know, if you see somebody that traded in a late model, let's say it was last year's model and it's only got 5,000 miles on it. You know, more, it's under warranty still, so you don't have to worry about that. You know, they probably haven't heard it. They probably bought it and just didn't like it or it wasn't the right vehicle for them, but I'd still want to talk to them. You know, so why did you trade it? And hopefully they'll give you the answer to that question. Why not? Or they say, don't bother me. You know, you just never know how people are going to be these days. But if, you know, I can call them for you, and if they see it's Gateway Ford's number, they'll probably answer the phone. If they see it's you, you know how people are. But you can always leave a message and be real nice and say, you know, I'm thinking about buying a car that you used to own. Again, the dealership may not want to give you that information because they could get in trouble. The customer may be one of those private people. I'll tell you what, those people will go irate. A lot of folks will if you give out their information. And I understand it. You know, this whole pandemic and just the relationships of the political environment has just put everybody on edge, it seems like. I mean, I get on edge sometimes, too, when I'm driving or waiting in line. My wife says, Lenny, you're a terrible line waiter. I know it. If I see a big line going around Powell's all the way out to the road, I'm not getting my tea. I'm going to go somewhere else, or I'm going to wait. I don't like to wait. I'm sorry. Okay, other preventative measures that you can take. Warranty history. You know, I talk about this on the show. If the vehicle was under warranty for a period of time, and the dealership has that information based on the VIN number, the 17-digit VIN number. Now, you probably won't get them to disclose much to you over the phone. The best thing to do is to, okay, so you're at a Chevy dealership and you're wanting to buy a Toyota. You get the VIN number. You go to the Toyota store, go to the service department, say, listen, I'm thinking about buying this Toyota Corolla, and here's the VIN number, and you don't have to tell me who the owner was or anything like that. I just want to make sure that it's not been a problem car while it was under warranty. Oh, sure, I'll check that for you. You know, if you ask that way, they'll do it. Now, if you go ask a salesperson about that, they're too busy for that, even though they're standing around smoking cigarettes, you know, they're probably dodging their rent collector or something. No, not really. But you've got to go to the right people. So if you want service history, you go to the service department and ask a service advisor. If he won't give it to you, he said, well, I'm not sure we're allowed to get that information. Can I speak to your service manager then?
Yeah.
And so then you get to speak to the service manager if he's not too busy. And just ask him, same question. I'm just thinking about buying this car, you know, and I don't want to make a mistake. I'm sure you understand that. Oh, yeah, I understand. So give him the VIN number, and he'll give you the information on the car. Warranty history, very important. Now the other thing is maintenance history. How do you find out about that? Well, if you're talking to the owner, just ask him, how often did you get your oil changed on your car?
Oh, I just waited till the light came on.
You know, that's not good. You know, if they say, Listen, I keep book. I have a book on every oil change I ever did on that car. Really? Could I maybe have that if I ended up buying the car? Sure. You know, so they can give you the information that will make you feel comfortable about making a purchase. You know, another thing you can do is have the car inspected. I mean, we occasionally have that happen. I mean, we sell a lot of certified used cars, so you can't get inspected better than that. But if you're buying a car from a little used car dealer somewhere and you're just not sure about it, please get it inspected by a independent third party. Who does that? Well, you take it to, you know, you could take it to a car dealership, a new car dealership. They'll work it in. It's just they're going to charge you probably $100 to do it. I mean, if you have a good friend that has a lift, I mean, you really can't inspect a car unless you put it up on a lift. If you just walk around it and, you know, kick the tires and you see people raise the hood, pull the dipstick, you know, listen to the motor, stuff like that. I mean, a good technician or somebody like me can drive a car and tell if it's got any current issues. But, you know, again, the crystal ball just doesn't always work like it did with that, or like it didn't with that Nissan Versa. So these are just a few things that you can do to make sure that you don't buy a problem car. You know, these people that go online and buy these cars from Carvana or Vroom, I think is another one. I'm sorry, but that's nuts. Because if you don't have any kind of history on the car, I know that they've got a return privilege. You ought to try to return one with their return privilege. They don't want to do it, and they make it hard for you to do it. But you need to be careful buying a car. You know, I don't even want a car that's been smoked in. I'm sorry, you smokers. I'm sorry you smoke, number one. Number two, I'm sorry that I don't like it because I don't like the way it smells in my car. And if somebody's driving my car, somebody can just drive my car one time and they can smoke in it, and a week later, I can still smell it. It's not like I'm real persnickety about that kind of stuff because, you know, I've been around smokers all my life, not in my house, but, you know, around the dealership and stuff. And, you know, when we were able to ban smoking in the dealership and inside business, well, we weren't able, the Tennessee did that for us, then that was great as far as I'm concerned because people used to walk into our showroom over on Church Street in the Chevy store back in the 70s. I mean, it was like a pool hall. It was not good. And my dad was just, you know, he smoked a pipe, so I don't think he was that sensitive to it. And he grew up in the 60s where everybody smoked. And, you know, so that, but I don't like it in a car, and you may not either. So Vroom delivers you a car, you get in and say, ew, you know, this is nasty. I smell cigarettes. So you just don't know. I'm not going to buy a car that I don't test drive first. And I'm not going to buy a car I don't talk to the previous owner and know the history and know if it was a warranty issue. You know, maybe it was a lemon. Maybe it was a buyback from the factory. Maybe this owner that you're buying it from didn't know that, but the previous owner had it bought back from the manufacturer, and they traded it in, and the dealer that sold it to this guy that you're buying it from, he didn't know it. Well, that's no good. You can find that out on a Carfax. Just be prudent, careful, call me. That's the best way to do it. 423-552-2020, or send me a text, and I'll check out the car. You know, I can't look at it in person unless you bring it here to Gateway Ford or Gateway Nissan. You better make sure I'm here. I've been goofing off a little bit lately. I'm going to take a break. I'll be back in just a minute. I read one time that the only thing common about common sense is that it's not very common. And a lot of people would think, well, it's common sense to get a car inspected before you buy it. But a lot of people don't do it. I mean, you know, I see these young mothers come in and trade cars, or fathers. I see they pull out the car seats out of the old car, and they put it in the new car, and they just use the lap belt. They don't use any of those things that cinch the belts together. You know, they don't use the tether straps and the locks that are on the seats. They're just not diligent about it. Now, I'm not saying all, but the vast majority are just like, you know, child seat Nazis. I mean, they want to make sure my daughters are that way. By golly, if I don't have the lap belt, if I don't have the seat belts tightened just the right amount, I get chastised. But I don't, you know, I want them to be safe as well. But everybody has their own standards. But some of these young people, they come in and you just wonder how the kids manage to survive because of not only the way the child seats are, if they even have child seats, but also just the condition of the car inside. It's just horrendous. And you just got to wonder if their house looks like that too. But I'm not judging, you know. I just do the best I can do as far as their new car, make sure they know how everything works, you know, show them the right way to put the seat in. I've done that bunches of times over my career, is put the seat in for them and show them the way to do it. Well, I didn't know that would clip there. Well, you know, read the instructions on your seat. I didn't say that, but, you know, these are in the owner's manual. There's so many different ways to do that. Let's protect those youngins because they don't have enough sense to protect themselves. That's up to us as adults. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru. I'll be back tomorrow.